No Accounting for Taste, a film podcast from Lauren Carol Harris and Tom Hogan. Today's film, Moonrise Kingdom, 2012, and The Darjeeling Limited, 2007.
This is No Accounting for Taste, which is kind of like the cook and the chef, but for film. I'm Maggie Beer, and across from me is Lauren Carol Harris.
Hey.
So this is like episode 5 of this podcast. Mm. We're doing very well, Lauren.
Oh, thanks.
Getting all those 5-star ratings on iTunes. And there's none, I'm kidding.
It's a nice idea.
So we've had like 4 films now. We're starting to get, Lauren and I are starting to figure out our kind of differences.
Yeah.
And
they're deep. They're deep. Psychological
deep
differences.
Psychological
we read
differences.
Movies really differently. We both love them, but we love the exact opposite things about them. We have the exact opposite tastes.
And we're reading into each other a lot as well in this process.
It's getting personal.
So we had like a month off because Lauren went away.
We didn't talk to each other.
Yeah, we don't talk. So we're just going to do something. We're trying something a little different this week. We're trying to do 2 films at once. We'll figure it out. We want to look at Wes Anderson, very distinct aesthetic. And I'm really confused by Lauren's pitch for this. Lauren wanted to do Moonrise Kingdom. And in my head, Moonrise Kingdom is, first of all, the Wes Anderson film that Wes Anderson film lovers put at the bottom of their list. For me, watching it, it's the kind of film that I was pretty sure that you would hate.
Oh, wow.
And it has all the things in this that even in the 4 films we've done, the things you criticize those 4 films for are all like present in this to the nth degree. And I want to hear why you like this film, Lauren.
Oh, wow. This is so exemplary of this whole weird process that we're on, hey, where we don't just have the exact opposite taste in films. We have the exact opposite taste in Wes Anderson films. Moonrise Kingdom, I see it as his sweetest film. You know, a lot of the time he's a formalist, you know. Like Wes Anderson is really attached to the style of film that he's making, and by form, I mean, you know, the visual kind of aspects.
As in like he knows his aesthetic.
Yeah,
so
his aesthetic.
Well.
Yeah, exactly. And he's known for it and he's crafted it. But, you know, Moonrise Kingdom, it's not just a love story. It's a story of young love, and they're on the run from the authorities. And, you know, it's 1965 in New England. Susie and Sam meet each other and that's it. I mean, they run away. And I think because a lot of the time I feel that Wes Anderson films, at their worst, they can be about their own style over the substance. And without the substance, they feel very beautifully put together and beautifully crafted, but what for, you know? I love this idea of a film about teens who are experiencing love for the first time, and I love films where the director really like engages the concerns in the hearts and minds of young people properly, you know, like, you really feel like you're 13 years old in this film. That's a beautiful thing.
Like you definitely want them to be in love, or like they are like unashamed, like they have just agreed to be in love.
And it's the world from their eyes, and that repeated motif of us looking through the binoculars, of Sam's binoculars, because he's a little boy
just
scout.
That
really puts us,
young and gooey. Yeah,
isn't it definitely beautiful? So all the whimsy, I feel like there's a point to it because we're really on this journey, and we even see the adults through the kids' eyes. You know what I mean? And the adults in the film have kind of forgotten what it's like to be kids, and that's what adults are like. They're evil. Let's face it.
Yeah, I feel like they think the adult. Yeah, that's true. I mean, in that there is a very clear distinction of the adults are pathetic and lonely and sad, and the kids are still enjoying life, and like that's a very clear distinction that is absolute.
Yeah.
I
believe in that. Like basically, I really believe in that.
I saw
that,
like
world
this
view.
Is Lauren saying that is what the world is like.
Yeah.
And I agree on that young love thing, the bit where they just decide to dance on the beach and it's just like one shot and they just like
and they pitch their tent
to Francois Hardy.
It's the idea of like that two-person world.
Yeah.
You know?
And like that, I remember seeing that in the cinema the first time, like just that scene. I was like, well, this is
that's
the
pretty
best.
Great.
This
Come
is
on.
The best.
It's, what a
it's
moment.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And Francois Hardy, that song, she sang in Eurovision in like 1963
oh, really?
Or 4.
Oh, that's awesome. So all the music is from that time, yeah?
Well, at least, yeah. Like
that is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because there's Rolling Stones in this as well and mm-hmm. Hank Williams. This is a great soundtrack. It's a really good soundtrack.
It really is.
I guess I'm... Okay, so yeah, so this is like, it's about optimism and like
yeah.
joy is youth and how that dies as you get older. So on that kind
first
of concept.
First love, yeah.
Don't you think like the characters in this, none of them change. They are the exact same person at the start. And then they're like, as far as a character arc goes, everyone is incredibly simplistic. Like no one has any, they're like, they have one thing and they do that and no one has changed by the end. Like no one has, there's nothing. No one, the single person develops anything. Like Bill Murray stays sad. The Frances McDormand, God, I love her. She was like so good. She's the only one who just like, you see, have a moment of realization
yeah, right.
that she has kind of failed as
she
a mother.
She kind of aids them in the end, doesn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah. She's like, she's sort of on
I
board
like
with
that
it.
A lot.
But I know Bruce Willis is exactly the same. Edward Norton is exactly the same. Like everyone,
I
the
don't
kids.
Think adults do change.
But the kids don't either. The kids, because the kids
oh,
are
so. Oh,
they're
changed by their young first love, for sure. For
no,
sure.
Because when we meet them, they're already in, like when we meet them, they are dead set on this path, and they just do it. And like the only thing that's doing that is stopping them from being together is like actual physical presence.
Yeah.
But there's no, they don't need. None of them have any anxiety that needs to be overcome in order to achieve this thing. Like they, you know, they have a specialized skill set and they achieve it. It's like, oh, it actually makes so much sense. There's no risk for almost anyone. It's an odd. I thought you'd pick up on you'd be not you'd pick up on it, but you would like find that bad or simplistic.
I think that's kind of if that's true. I think it's true to life.
That people don't change.
Yeah.
I guess it takes short period of a shorter period of time, but it's for a film. I'm like, I want to see, like, no one is challenged. Like,
do you think that people can change their fundamental essence?
Yeah.
Maybe this is a thing that. Maybe this is a thing that this film is about.
Well, I think what I want in a
totally?
Film is characters to like achieve something.
The character must change, as Rob McKee says in Adaptation.
Oh, he can't just be. I think it just became once I realized it, you just see it over and over again. Like the only person who. Like they try to pretend that Bruce Willis has changed, but he doesn't do it. Like he's just like, well, okay, well, I'll just adopt him.
Bruce Willis is a great addition to that Wes Anderson world, isn't he?
It's so weird how he
Edward
melded
Norton.
Into that.
Yeah,
it's so
it's
weird
extraordinary.
How he fit. You always thought perfectly. He would stand out.
Like, no, he just slotted right in. Yeah. And it's so funny because that kind of tough guy persona that we know him from his action hero kind of Die Hard days. It just melted away because you realize how kind of constructed that
persona was.
That not just the persona, but that like so-called like internalized realistic acting style is. But like in Wes Anderson movies, like the acting style is so specific to Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's very constructed, but when you buy it, when it's all set up and the tone is set up right, you know, I feel like the tone is kind of like a structure for performances to happen in. You know what I mean? Like, you know how there's a movie out at the moment, War Machine, by Australian director David Michaud. Yeah, it's a Brad Pitt film and he produced it too, and it's kind of not quite right, weird satire about the war in Afghanistan. And it's about the idea that, you know, the US used to invade crumbling empires. Now it is a crumbling empire. And it's a kind of satirical thing. It's in the vein of, you know, Doctor Strangelove and things like that.
Yeah,
and everyone's
kind
of like,
heightened.
Brad, yeah, heightened, that heightened dramatic tone, exactly. And everyone's always like, well, Brad Pitt's performance stands out. Like he's all jerky and mannered and he has his elbows propped like a G.I. Joe. And it's like, well, that's not the problem. The problem is the tone of the film doesn't
like
kind of prime you for
that
kind of accelerated. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Moonrise Kingdom gets right. Yeah, exactly.
I guess for me it was like watching a friend of mine just the other night said that the one thing she can't stand about Wes Anderson films as a broad stroke was that like the dryness of people staring at the camera and then saying
yes,
the thing.
Yes.
And once you notice that, you're like, oh,
that's what it is.
Basically every single person just announces their feeling. There is no in this one, they just say, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm trying to do. There's no hidden agenda for anyone. Everyone is like,
yeah, right.
Actually,
I think that works in this movie because it's kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like kids have more transparency. Adults never say what they mean. They're
but
not
these
direct.
Adults do. Like
they're kind
like
of arrested
Bill
development
Murray
adults.
Is like, I am depressed and I'm going to try. Like he announces his action before he does it.
Yeah,
and he says he's depressed.
Right.
Every single person is, Yeah, I think that there's one bit with Frances McDormand when she's having a conversation with her daughter about Bruce Willis, and she's like, "I see what you did with that sad cop," and she's like, "Yeah, well, sad stupid cop," and then Frances McDormand goes, "Yeah, he's a bit sad, but he's not stupid." And then later, Bruce Willis says, "I am so stupid."
Yeah,
like
yeah,
he knows
yeah.
he's stupid. Like,
yeah, know. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was nice.
Okay, yeah. So, what else do people say about Moonrise Kingdom?
Why
do you?
I guess I'm more interested in like your. So one, for instance, one of the things you didn't like, you can do that. Grab the door. Let me get this out. One of the things that you didn't like about, say, Logan, right? You were like, I hate the way that everything is, the Foley is so accentuated. Mm. And I was watching this and the entire soundscape is incredibly accentuated. Mm. Things happen in the left speaker that is so incredible, like it's so hyper real. Everything is super loud.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was like, wow, this is the thing that Lauren was saying was broken in Logan and annoyed her. And this one, it was more present than ever. And I looked it up and it's the same sound team that did Logan.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
And so it's the same idea of someone picking up the phone and it goes as it goes to the phone and it's like hyper.
Well, like Logan pictures itself as a gritty, realistic action picture.
And so
because
this is heightened, it's okay.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is the Wes Anderson thing, is that it's very stagey, it's very non-naturalistic. If you think about what are the hallmarks of a Wes Anderson picture, what is its style about? There's a lot of symmetry. It's almost like a live-action cartoon, which he didn't invent. Like, there's a lot of references to Mike Nichols, The Graduate. And I think Mike Nichols was one of the first filmmakers to kind of zoom in on a character's face to bring out that awkward humour or to swish the camera around really quickly before locking onto the subject. You know, there's a lot of overhead shots looking down. You know how like in Wes Anderson movies they're often like reading letters and like old school. People write to each other and things like that. There's one point perspective, like always, like he puts the subject bang in the middle of the frame all the time. And generally I think filmmakers are instructed not to do that because asymmetry is a bit more visually dynamic and things like that. But Wes Anderson is always consciously creating, constructing this very set up style. And, you know, the sound, it goes with that.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
it's not realism as we know it.
So
I was even trying to think like, what's the genre of this? Like, how do you even classify it? Because, you know, it's like, it's a Wes Anderson film. Like, he kind of made up his own
genre. Is dead, Lauren. Genre is dead. There's no genres anymore.
Like, it's comedic, it's a drama, blah, blah, blah.
It's a romance. I think it's something like, so all the things you mentioned about the aesthetic. So a friend of mine is a passionate Wes Anderson film, but for her this is the idea of you can see Wes Anderson has like he's got a knob of Wes Anderson aesthetic.
He's put it up to
He's put it up to 10 and he's gone, I wonder if I can push this just a little bit more. And it's like it's too Wes Anderson to be
anything real.
Yeah. Whereas like so for you it like it allows the story to be.
It has an emotional logic that I know how to hook into. Like, that's why I'm confused about why Darjeeling Limited is your favourite Wes Anderson.
It's such a good,
why you nominated that one. Because to me that is like pure
drivel.
Style with very little substance that I can engage with.
Whereas I think that was when Wes Anderson realised, at that point I reckon he'd gotten the criticism of having an aesthetic that's too kitschy for his own good. And it starts
too whimsical.
Too whimsical and stuff like that. And so what you have is this train which is obviously constructed and it's very kitschy. Yeah. And as soon as they're off the train, the aesthetic is gone. Like he can't
hold it up.
He can't have the Wes Anderson aesthetic
in
India. Like India is going to be India whatever you do. And as a result, the characters fall, anything that the characters had falls apart. They don't communicate anymore and they don't need to. They just bask in India. And it's
so what's it about? What do you see this movie as being about?
One thing when you watch like three brothers who are like going on a spiritual journey. Then you see it's written by three people and it's Wes Anderson, Roman Coppola and Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
Okay, you guys have just written your own things and let's put them together.
So it's an autobiography.
Yeah, it's set up in that kind of way.
It's a three-way autobiography.
Yeah, like let's see who's got the real emotional pain.
And it's kind of like a road movie but on a train.
Yeah.
And it's a bromance.
Wes Anderson's obsessed with like family and brotherhood and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So this
but what's he saying about family and brotherhood?
I think this is about like empathy and actually communication. And for me this is it's really big because I'm someone if there's a sense that I'm not like syncing with a person that I like love or want to hang out with or whatever, it's like you I immediately jumped to communication to the point that it's probably overbearing and makes me more of a brat. Like, I'm like, let's communicate about this friendship, for instance, right?
Oh.
And in this one, they
really
do that,
talk it out.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
And this one, they do it constantly and they hate each other. They like literally do not want to get along, and they all announce, like, do you think we'd be friends in real life? And they're kind of like,
nah.
But then as soon as they're off the train.
Because, like, no, you'd never allow a friend to order your food for you.
Yeah.
At a
and,
right?
and as much as that's like, that is whimsy in this, it's like, oh, they're trying to make it kind of fun. You go, like, wow, these guys just hate each other and they're all kind of douchebags to each other.
That's what family is.
And then and that's what family is. And then as soon as they get off the train and they try to save the three kids, and then Adrian Brody says, I couldn't save mine. First of all, I burst into tears.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. It's just like, it was like,
really?
Yeah, because these people who are like super strong and like just like, they're like, oh, they suddenly realize that their problems are already insignificant. And as much as that's like a cliche of like, it requires like, this allows them to uncover the spirituality of India. They basically are at a loss, and all the things that Wes Anderson can rely on to make a film now are gone. And you just watch them literally whenever they're in India from then on off the train, they're in silence. They can't talk. They don't talk. And that's when they actually get along.
So it's missed connections.
Yeah.
Of communication.
But like that's when they understand things. And that's why later when they, as soon as they decide to go back home, they're talking again and they can't, and they're fighting immediately. And they go, well, let's go visit our mum. Well, they track their mum down and go to it. And it's
in her convent.
And she's amazing. Oh, I love her.
Yeah,
so
she's
much.
The best.
They fight immediately, and then you see where all their insecurities come from. And then the only thing she can say is, we can resolve our problems without verbalizing them. And then they sit there quietly and it just scans between their four faces, and they all actually understand each other's problems and emotions, and then the film's resolved. Like, it actually is about like not
verbalizing.
Yeah, non-verbal, which is a thing that I find really hard.
That
to
would be crazy
sometimes.
For me.
Yeah, yeah, it's just
that would drive me mental.
Yeah, and that's why this film works like as a resolution to like understanding the people that you're kind of forced with or the people that you're with. It's like, it really isn't about discussing it all the time, I think. Or at least maybe that's just me now.
Yeah, right. Isn't that interesting, the way you kind of wrap a film around you?
Your current context.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
What watching Moonrise Kingdom now, did that echo for you?
Yeah.
You were just like, oh, now I get it. Now it's kids are in love.
I've always got it.
Adults are
sad. Yeah, yeah, pretty much. Whereas, you know, I think I read Darjeeling Limited as a film about disappointment, but I could never feel that in the way that it was presented. So, you know, that they are three estranged brothers and they're all at a point in their lives where they're basically in denial. And are they going to come out of that denial or not? And I think a lot of good films are structured around denial as the impetus for the character's
journey.
And
then the characters have a journey and then they change over time, and then you like appreciate them more because of that.
Yeah, and
unlike
you know, a tragic
Moonrise
story
Kingdom, Lauren,
is when they go back into their denial, or they can't deal with the changes in their life.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Adrian Brody character, you know, his partner's pregnant, 7.5 months pregnant.
See, and immediately, as soon as you find that out, you go like, what a dick. Like, you hate him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he is awful until, it's in the, when he stops trying to be who he is, he just, suddenly he's back in, he's like, oh, that's a thing that I'm,
yeah.
He knows what he has to do.
For me, like, the tone of it is so detached and so wry that I can never get to that point where it's like, oh, they're disappointed with their lives. They're coming up against, you know, that constant disappointment of adulthood. And it's like, I just remember it always as a film about Louis Vuitton luggage.
I mean,
on a
that's
train
like,
trip.
That's
like,
such a
like Moonrise Kingdom, it's anchored in Wes Anderson's childhood, but this is like an outsider's, Westerner's view of India.
Yeah.
So I don't, it doesn't have that same emotional grounding in a true reality. Like, it's even more abstracted for me.
Because it is not like, it's a nonsense
it's
idea.
It's very clever. It's
their idea
very
of going
clever.
Like, let us go to India. You know, it's like, you guys.
I never felt it was a spiritual journey.
Well,
and then you watch
them trying to do it and they can't. Like, every time they do, they just, they become even more, they just can't engage in it until they just engage in the humanism of the place, deal with death and grief because they're grievous about their, you don't want to deal with death? Oh my God. Like, they've just realized that they can die. You know what I mean? And then they are full on facing it, and they're kind of, they have to deal with that in order to survive and love each other. Like,
I never got to the melancholic part, you know, like to me the surface and the artifice of it was so strong that I could never get to the depth of
but they
it.
Had
like
luggage.
I was looking
That's
at
emotional
some
luggage, Lauren. Didn't you get that?
Oh, really? Is that Is that an actual metaphor?
Like, totally. It's like, yeah, wow, in the final scene they let go of the luggage and it falls. It's so thinly veiled that
really?
It's probably...
Is that true?
Yeah, totally. Like, he represents...
Oh, that's bad, Tom. That's bad.
It's the heightened that's aesthetic of Wes Anderson where they announce their feelings and
See, this is confirming, like, my view, basically. Like, with the Rotten Tomatoes... critics who are
the height of criticism at the time.
Yeah. Joe Morgenstern from the Wall Street Journal says the film as a whole operates in Mr. Anderson's patented semi-precious zone of antic and droll. I get what he means, like the drollness can distance you as a viewer. Amy Nicholson says a Wes Anderson film is like a snow globe. It's hermetically sealed, precious, and pointless. And then Dave Calhoun from Time Out says, for all Anderson's pleasing, refreshing auteur tendencies, the overwhelming feeling delivered by the Darjeeling Limited is a frustration, deja vu, and little progression. I think, like, if you can't emotionally connect to it, it does feel extremely concerned with its own artifice, with, you know, the props and the symmetry and the colours.
I guess that's
and
why.
And the deadpan kind of one-liners.
That's why it's important as soon as they get off. The train represents... Well, for me at least, because I'm watching it now, is like, oh, this is Wes Anderson being Wes Anderson. It's about his style. It's like the train represents what he's comfortable in, which is this like a train that they built for the movie to have the right colors and the right color palette and so they can do the right dolly shots. And as soon as they're off, it's gone. And like he can't rely on what he knows and what he's good at.
Do you ever think about...
Like, I think it's a metaphor about his process.
Oh, really?
You know what I mean? I thought it's actually about him trying to not do his aesthetic and being forcing himself to do that. And I really love this in the sense that, like, you can see an artist trying, really actively trying to do something different in a world where he can't possibly be himself. Like, they can't rely on dialogue, they can't rely on colour or placement or anything like that that he normally is
they're actually
100%
lost.
Control yeah, of. Yeah. And I think, I guess relate to that on a creative level. And I was wondering maybe if it's just like, is just because it's just like a dude bro film that it means that I'm somehow connecting.
I was thinking about the gender stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think you're headed for a midlife crisis?
I was like, yeah, maybe. Am I relating to this?
What
because
the
I
fuck?
Am that,
you're a
you know?
White guy, Tom.
But the women in this are so like, so strong, and they just happen to not. That's like you want to hear their stories, but they are so absolute. Like Angelica Houston is like she is in total control of who she is, and she just doesn't want to deal with these douchebags. Essentially, like she's like, I'm running away from my grief, or away.
It's that thing where you feel like you're looking in on Wes and his mates having like the best rehearsal of their lives, and they're all playing to their kind of archetypes.
Exactly what they
and,
are. And that's
you
why
know, the
on
the thing
train
that does
are.
Get me, the thing that does really get me, is you look at Owen Wilson's battered, plastered face, and you remember that he tried to kill himself before this film, or kind of while it was being made, or there was some kind of suicide attempt.
Yeah, and isn't
before.
That what like Royal Tenenbaum's kind of?
Yeah, yeah,
is Luke
yeah,
Wilson
yeah.
being. On Wilson's pain, you know what I mean? Like, and so like, yeah, they are all being themselves, like heighten themselves. And then, but as soon
this is the hermetically sealed world, isn't it?
Yeah.
But like when it works, it really works. And when it doesn't, you're like, this is what is this? This is irrelevant. Like this is its own game.
I guess that's why. Yeah. So the snowball metaphor kind of works that you actually, this is looking into like Wes Anderson's world, a controlled world, and Wes Anderson trying not to be in that. And that's why for me...
Because he's such a grown-up kid, obviously.
Well, he's just learning how to be more than
this
he is.
This is why I think
Whereas
Fantastic
Moonrise,
Mr. Fox is actually better than Darjeeling Limited.
I love
Fantastic.
That's
I love
the
that. Fucking sickest movie.
Beautiful film. It's so good.
It's so beautiful.
But that is when he is in 100% control of the environment.
Yeah,
it's like
true.
Animated and stop
that's
motion.
That's kind of the ultimate control.
Whereas like Moonrise Kingdom is like he's not even pretending to not be himself now. He's like, cool, I'm just gonna go head first down on this path. And it's like if I showed this to say, I reckon my dad, he just think the whimsy is stupid. You know, he's just like, oh, why are we fuck, like, why this? And but I guess it's me as well, because I'm not like visual enough to go like, oh, this like I know. I'm not sure exactly what I'm trying to say here anymore. I'm just not good at design, you know, Lauren?
Yeah, what is it? Why do you think it is a male film?
Yeah, I mean, like the ones who really get a voice in this film are dudes, and that's
the
like
dudes.
It's overbearing how duty they are.
They
and
can't deal with like their wife being pregnant,
or just
or
like all the women are really strong at that time. Like, if you see Natalie Portman, like in like the short film
the
before
short,
Hotel,
yeah, Hotel
and then,
Chevalier,
and you see her in a bit, like she's just like she's going to do what she wants to do, and she's not going through a crisis. So it's like there's no story there, but she becomes like the best, most powerful person. And same with Angelica Houston, they're trying to get her and she's just like, I'm not your answer, and I'm not, because I'm not going to deal with your grief. Like, that's your stuff to deal with. I'm doing it my way. And even his wife, who he just like, who you don't even really hear from, she for some reason is like putting up with the fact that her husband is a total, like, he's run away at the worst time. But yeah, you're right. You just watch pained dudes, and it's like that's really present.
Who can't communicate?
Yeah, who can't communicate properly? Or at least, no, when they can't, they can. They get along. When they do communicate,
it's a disaster.
It's a disaster. It's like, because they're not friends. And I think I read more into the friendship and empathy stuff, and I sort of enjoy Wes Anderson trying not to design his own style. And I think I find that like quite lovely. Whereas Moonrise Kingdom, I can see it going like, how can I do Wes to the power of Wes? You know, how can I be more Wes than ever?
It is about this connection between the style and the substance. Like, if you connect to the emotion of it, then you don't see it as flimsy, whimsy.
Yeah,
you see
it as, so it's like what you're.
Yeah.
And so, and my only, the only thing that I probably should add here is that, like, so Moonrise Kingdom, when it came out and I saw it at the cinema, I was like, that was the best. Like, I loved it.
Oh, really?
I genuinely loved the film. And I haven't
dripped away.
Well, I haven't seen it since then. It's the one I haven't really wanted to see again.
Really?
It hasn't drawn me back. Because I think in my head it became incredibly simplistic and like,
oh,
but like lovely.
Okay.
But simple. Having said that, watching it again, I'm like, I still love this film. Like, I love this film. And I was more interested to hear why
watch it probably once a year.
Really?
Yeah.
But that's my Darjeeling Limited.
Ew, yeah.
In a way that like...
That's fucked.
Yeah. But having said that, maybe Royal Tenenbaum is like a perfect film for me. Like, it's a perfect film. And that's, he hasn't figured out exactly who Wes Anderson is yet.
I think Margot is the emotional heart of that film, isn't she?
Oh, no, they're all like, I just
this
love
them. This is before we realised Gwyneth Paltrow is like an off the rails insane plutocrat.
Yeah, it was just before she really started to announce that to the world via vlogs. So I don't know where that leads. Like, I just realised, like, coming into this, that I'd just have to, it's more about like figuring out what you like about it. Because for me, it was like, it's a very clear-cut story.
Well, I'm saying you have to be nostalgic about something.
Yeah.
That nostalgia can't be for the sake of itself. And if you don't...
So it justifies in that
way. Yeah, and if you don't have that anchor to attach to emotionally, you just see it as an exercise in style for the sake of itself.
Interesting. I think I
really like, I'd be very happy just never to watch Darjeeling Limited again.
Yeah.
It rings so empty for me. I'm like, what the fuck?
Whereas like
why?
Even now I still want to watch the funeral scene of Darjeeling Limited again, of like, and that entire segment.
Adrian
of just,
Brody looking mopey.
That is Adrian Brody, except in the movie
Remember
Predators.
When he was like the next guy of Hollywood? Remember the piano?
Yeah, they were like, oh my, there's this. Oh, but he does weird films. He does like, he wants to be a chameleon. Like, he wants to do everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was in Predators and going like,
oh my God, that's
like,
right.
That is,
that's
my
an
next
insane
film.
Choice to make.
It makes him incredibly interesting to me. Of like,
wow.
He's going to Adrian Brody everything. And I don't actually know who he is as an actor. And I think that's what I love about him. And in this one, I don't know what I think about him. I kind of love it.
I think that's our standoff. I can't deal with the dour, switched off, disappointed dudes.
Whereas I guess I need
And
I
you
need
can't
more,
deal with 13-year-olds in love.
But I know I love that they're in love. Just like, it's like, of course they're in love, but they just decided to be in love and then they do the thing.
Yeah.
And it was like,
they make the journey.
Yeah. Well,
they look
through
the binoculars.
For me, there was no journey. Like, okay. they get there and then.
You are the sad adult. You're the Bruce Willis.
Maybe I am, Lauren. Whereas
no,
I feel
me.
Like.
That's
I guess
me.
It's like.
That's literally me.
You're the sad, sad Bruce Willis. I just feel like it's like, at least in Darjeeling Limited, I see these people who think they're powerful and they realize they're weak. And this one, everyone knows who they are in a way that doesn't make it interesting for me. It's like a story thing.
This has been a productive conversation.
I think so.
This has been good.
Has it?
Has it?
I don't know what I'd give it though. Like, because I know I'm only giving a zero because you're giving it a five for Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah.
But like, I still, like, I loved this. I love it. I love the film. I remember being like, at the time, getting to the end,
Taken
going
to
like,
1965.
Like, at the end, going like, why, this ending was so weak.
Oh.
But not kind of caring, and it was kind of fine. It was just like, by the way, I love that Tilda Swinton's name is Social Services. Like,
yes,
that's her character's
yes.
name.
It's such a meta thing, isn't
so,
it?
So like, yeah, cool. I just, yeah. She just is a machine to drive the plot. And has no character, just the thing.
And she's a paper cutout.
But they're all like that.
All right, so I'm all for 13-year-old Wes, you're for 35-year-old Wes.
Yeah, I think I want to know what the adult thinks of life, not the kid. Because, the kids fulfill that stereotype of what kids do.
Yeah.
Of how they are optimistic and everything's new and, like, love is achievable.
Okay, well, I have a feeling next time, that we're drawn to pretty opposite things
in similar directors.
So you
think we should do another
yeah,
right, another Anderson? Another Anderson, do you think, Lauren?
Oh.
Because I...
Paul Thomas.
I'm obsessed with Paul Thomas Anderson.
Let's go there.
Kids online, or our listeners. Okay, we'll do us. Paul Thomas Anderson. I want to talk about Magnolia. I love Magnolia. Do you like Magnolia?
Vomit. Hashtag vomit.
What?
I watch The Master every 6 months, I reckon.
You're kidding? No way.
And I listen to the soundtrack every day.
The soundtrack's beautiful. It's
the most beautiful. It's perfect.
Oh my God.
Okay, this is it. Next time we're doing
Magnolia versus The Master. Oh my God.
All right, I'm ready.
Holy shit.
Thanks, Tom. It's been sweet.
Yeah, thanks. I'm actually really worried about next time. Anyway, okay, cool.
Guess there's no accounting for taste.
Thanks, Lauren.
No Accounting for Taste, a film podcast from Lauren Carol Harris and Tom Hogan. You can also follow us on Twitter at NAFT Podcast. Thank you for listening. Isn't film grand?